Hello, everybody, and welcome to this latest edition of the ASI Videocast. I'm delighted to say that we're joined today by John Waite, who's Global Managing Director at Havas Media, the media agency group, I should say. A lot of you tuning into this will be aware that John gave a paper at the ASI conference in Nice about 2 years ago, I think it was, or a year and a half ago, with Mike Follett of Lumen. And I think, sparing his blushes, John is probably, well, within agencies, recognised as the agency guy who knows the most about attention, known as the attention guy, I think, aren't you?
Yeah, we always seem to get these labels, yeah.
the attention guy. So welcome, John, anyway, and it's great to have you with us, and thanks a lot for doing this. So, John, what kind of started or piqued our interest in this, in putting together this interview, was that you wrote a piece in the Media Leader, the UK trade journal, where you made the distinction between attention via, I suppose, what you could call sort of biometrics, i.e. mm-hmm. eye tracking, something like eye tracking. Normally it is eye tracking. And attention via media quality measures, which I imagine are things like time spent or position on the screen or some sort of quality of the actual transmission of the materials. Mm-hmm. Can you just elaborate a little bit on the differences of those? I mean, are there, for example, suppliers in both, or do you think that there are these two things coming together? Do they correlate? Does one correlate with the other?
Yes.
How do you see that?
Yeah, sure. I think it's been happening for a while, because it's very, you know, if you wind back the clock 5 years, I worked on a paper with Karen Nelson Field whilst I was at Dentsu around the attention economy. And we published that in 2019, and then again in 2021 with Lumen, trying to sort of define what attention in media is. And both of those things used eye tracking technology. And since that point, people have rightly said, well, you can be paying attention without looking at something. You know, what's the value of audio? Or I can be paying attention to something, or I can tell if some people are paying attention to something by, I don't know, how fast they scroll, or if they go on to buy the product, for example. So attention to advertising. So rightly so, obviously, eye gaze is not the only way you could define attention to advertising. So people, the sort of attention economy has sort of split into different ways that you could possibly measure people's attention to it. I think that's broadly fine. I mean, I guess a lot of those early studies were looking at what is the impact specifically of eye gaze on outcomes for brands. So correlating what happens when you get a duration of eye gaze to brand recall, consideration, or stats. And generally, they found positive correlations. So it gave us confidence to say, like, gaze duration is something we want to be looking at alongside reach, frequency, and ultimately outcomes-based KPIs, performance-based KPIs. But there's an interesting space that's developed in between, because I think in that article, I sort of said there's what I believe to be true attention metrics for that basis. You could call it visual attention metrics. I'm trying to get specific around language, because attention could be defined in 100 different ways. So maybe it's visual attention. And the biggest differential is those vendors. So I'll pinpoint three. So Lumen, Playground XYZ, Amplified Intelligence, so Karen's business, use panels of eye tracking data, so panels of people, and they're tracking eye gaze to ads, and then they're creating predictive models from those panels, which they map to device data. So when we observe that an ad is this size on this kind of domain with this amount of ad clutter around it, spends this amount of time visible on screen, what does the panel data tell us about the likelihood that someone's looked at that and for how long? So I think critically, they're collecting ground truth data, so observations about how people behave when certain things remain true of what's happening on the screen. And that's a lot of stuff that was sort of validated through those early research projects. And then on the other side, you've got, well, stuff that doesn't use that ground truth data, but instead correlates those things that are happening on screen. So scroll speed and clutter and placement, viewability, lots of different variables, and correlates those to outcomes, and says when we see an ad that is large, takes up the full screen, and is served on these kinds of domains, the likelihood that it will drive an outcome, which in most cases would be some form of digital KPIs, so website conversions or landing or sale, we deem that to be of higher quality than other placements. So the attention measures are fundamentally looking to search for people who are looking at ads and looking at them for longer. And the media quality metrics are more focused on, I want to buy media that's more likely to deliver me an outcome. I think that's the fundamental difference, is they're actually trying to deliver two different things. But where you see the similarity is when you optimize to or measure both, you see that, let's take seconds of attention from the attention side, what you end up with is bigger ads, fuller screen sizes, better devices, better device mix, better mix of domains, less MFA, so made for advertising inventory on those sites. And you get exactly the same when you optimize towards these other measures, which are probably more likely to be scored on an index. So a 0 to 100 kind of score, for example. So whichever approach you take, whether you're optimizing to get people to look at, sorry, optimizing to placements that are likely to receive more attention, or let's say these scores, you're getting a better quality of media placement, I guess. So methods, different methodologies, but similar outcomes, I would say.
Right. I mean, it's interesting this, isn't it? Because it's rather like in so many different areas of the media industry these days, we use the same word to describe yes. fundamentally different things.
That makes things really complicated.
Exactly. I mean, attribution, I was thinking just as you were talking, I mean, is a classic case in point, isn't it? Where, you know, attribution, which seems to have, I mean, unless I've had my head down a hole or something, seems to have fallen slightly out of fashion, thank goodness. Yeah. But there was a time when everyone was talking about attribution and sort of almost seeing it as the same thing as market mix modeling or some form of advanced analytics, whereas actually, as you said, it was more to do with some kind of relationship between what was on the screen and some kind of digital outcome, a click or something.
Yeah, and that's the biggest problem, is there's a massive incrementality problem there. Most of the stuff attribution modeling would show you is probably stuff that would have happened anyway without advertising. So that's the difficulty.
Yeah, I mean, there's a marketoonist cartoon of a guy buying a pair of sneakers, and he comes across ads for sneakers all over the place. He sees people wearing sneakers. He receives a catalog about the sneakers. He sees an ad on TV for the sneakers. He sees an ad on posters for sneakers. Here's an ad on the radio for sneakers. Mm. Eventually, he goes to the store, and as he's going into the store, he gets an offer on his mobile for the sneakers and buys them.
For full price.
and of course, attribution modeling would tell you that therefore we should put all of our money into mobile advertising.
Yeah, well, it's been a huge problem of digital. I'm calling it digital lazily, but online, let's say, advertising for too long. In that, many companies that supply data are just very good at understanding the behaviors of people when they're about to convert to a sale or a conversion, and the incentivization therefore is to serve them advertising when you understand they're about to convert. It's not the cause of the conversion, but they've understood very well what they look like before they're doing that. And that, mix that with how gameable so many digital KPIs can be. I mean, spend any time with someone like Augustine Fu, and look at his click analysis, it would be bonkers to optimize towards something like clicks, for example, because anything that can be gained by a bot will be. And even beyond clicks, he has a very good analysis of where the outcome they desired was filling out data capture forms, so address and phone number to recapture. I think it was for a university. And bots can fill those forms out with fake information. So when they actually recontacted people, 90% of the phone number supplied didn't exist. The email addresses are all bounced, and if you're incentivizing the algorithms to optimize towards those things, it creates a nightmare. I mean, look at the volume of MFA sites we now have. I think 25% of the last count of sort of digital ad inventories is MFA, and it's because of that we're optimizing towards stuff that is wrong. And we really desperately want outcomes, but it's really hard to drive that.
Yeah, I mean, Augustine, he's quite right about this as well. I mean, he makes the point over and over again. I mean, we're going slightly off point, but he makes the point over and over again that don't make the big mistake of thinking that bots are idiots. People who write these algorithms, the people who actually are gaming the system, are unquestionably several steps ahead of the people who are trying to do it right. Yeah. And so, whatever you think you're going to do to sort of fool them, almost certainly you won't.
Well, whenever there's billions of dollars at stake, then yes.
But going back to attention, I mean, you also in this article you laid out six key criteria, which I think were transparency, validation, commercials, service, by which I presume you mean people, service, yep, versus automation, integrations, by which I imagine you mean integration with other systems,
yep,
and testing.
Yeah,
I mean, this seems like a very good list. I mean, to what extent do you see the current suppliers getting ticks on all of those, or does anyone get ticks on all of those?
Yeah, I sort of I think I was sort of after that article, I sort of followed up with various vendors who were all in sort of equal measure supportive, and then had a slight dig at me for some of the points because they don't all score highly on every single thing. But this is the reality, and I think that's what's really important is, individuals using these companies have to decide which ones they're really going to double down on. So, I'm really hot on transparency because I just like to understand how things work. And also, I'm the guy that has to sit in meetings with the end client and explain to them what we're doing, why we're doing it, and how it works. And, there's a lot of questions that come with that. So I don't like not being able to answer those questions confidently. So the transparency piece really was interesting because I understand the need. If you're creating a sort of metric that is your IP and that is your product, of course you don't want to give away the sort of secret sauce as to how you create that and craft that and customize it. But you do have to, in some way, shape or form, give enough information for people to feel confident that it's not, in the extreme, if you had a metric that was completely opaque, that metric could be optimizing towards placements where you've got buddies who own publishers. Let's say that an extreme example. I'm not saying that's happening. That's a really extreme example. If I don't understand how it's scoring different placements and what drives that, so what factors go into creating that score, what weighting is normally applied to them, where does the outcomes data come from that you're then correlating to, it's really hard to feel super confident in that and then recommend that to clients. Whereas, but I think you could submit, if you don't want to do that to your end client or agency, you could go to a third party. So a third party, whether that's the MRC or a consultancy or whatever, to look under the hood of that and say, yes, when you are modeling this, the things that you are modeling are done correctly and safely and the data is robust is sort of enough. So I'm quite hot on transparency. But then in conversations, when I'm asked by clients or colleagues in other markets, they'll say, well, I sort of don't care if it's giving me the results that I want, right? They're willing to just A/B test one vendor versus another and say, well, if this one drove the outcome or the KPI that I wanted better than this one did, then I sort of don't mind how it works. So I'm maybe in the minority of people that really, really cares about methodology and transparency, but that's going to depend on the individual, right?
Yeah, but it's funny. It's a sort of problem that's as old as time, isn't it? I mean, there have been all kinds of different ways in which this issue of, well, we're not going to tell you what we're doing because you might go and steal it.
Yeah,
I mean, there was a technique years back where the IPA used to run a sort of gold star type system, didn't they? A sort of validation type system where, if you wanted your particular piece of research to be used by agencies and for research, read technology, then you had to convince the experts at the IPA that it was what it said it was. And then you got a sort of validation stamp and then everyone felt confident about it.
Yeah.
It seems to me that that's a pretty basic requirement that, anybody who's and especially as a third party, like an agency that's buying this kind of stuff or recommending it to clients, you should feel confident that it is what it says it is.
Yeah, well, it's a very interesting point because, as an agency, you have the IPA who you will, who are sort of who sort of vet you or give you their certification, for example. That doesn't exist for a sort of digital ad tech vendor. And I think it's a good idea. Like, there should be a body set up to validate that these companies are doing things accurately, ethically. But who does that, right? And who funds it? But it's a good idea.
I think it's quite an interesting thing because, I mean, there have recently been new entries. I mean, I'm careful what I'm saying now, getting Mike and ASI into trouble. But there have certainly been new vendors in the attention space whose reputation, let's say, in their previous activities has not been particularly transparent or particularly validated by anyone much. And so there's a sort of danger, I suppose, that, we just sort of go, oh, well, it must be all right because so and so says it's all right. And whereas actually what you really need is someone to look under the hood of it, as you put it, and say, yeah, this is great, this is fine, you can use this for confidence. Now, how you use it and what you do with it and how you build it into your plans, that's a matter for you and for, for other users. But surely
It's
it's
understanding the the different data sources that are going in, how robust they are, where they come from, how they're collected, and some examples of how they're weighted and scored. Because I understand, a lot of these companies will say, well, AI modeling then steps in and does this. But I'm fine with that because that means it will change all the time and update all the time, as it probably should. These things aren't linear and they're different. But I want to see examples of how that works differently and why that's worked differently. But again, I might be in the minority. So, so I sort of think I from but it becomes really important when you start to get into the conversation around currencies, around currency, or if it's in any way going to augment sort of audience delivery currency, for example. So if we were ever going to have attention metrics as part of Barb, for example, or Project Origin, then the market would accept no less than 100% transparency and full understanding of how those things work. So whilst I think while we're still in the area of brands using this to gain some form of advantage and understand more about what they're buying and quality of what they're buying, it's less important than if it does reach the point of a, forming part of a JIC, for example.
I think, and I think that's what will happen. I think that if, I mean, you mentioned Origin. I mean, just the way in which they are seem to be going about seeing themselves almost as a kind of validator of some of the data that goes into the Origin system. So from some of the online suppliers, where let's just put it that not all of the data emerging, not all of the information emerging from some of these platforms has necessarily been all that accurate or all that consistent over time. So there is definitely a role for, as you said, I mean, if you're going to have an industry-wide system, be it Barb or Origin or anything else, then there's, you would expect that someone has looked at this and said, yeah, that's fine, that's okay, we're happy with that. I mean, it brings me on to another point that you make the point about service and people. I mean, it's an interesting dilemma, this, isn't it, really? Because on the one hand, as an agency, you must, you don't have millions of people milling around looking at this stuff day in and day out, and so you presumably want to have the confidence that comes with people on the other end of the phone being able to actually explain what it is they're doing and all the rest of it. The people on the other end of the phone, of course, want to do it with as few people as possible and as much automation as possible, I would imagine. And if you want to have a consultancy service, that has pretty serious implications for cost, I would guess. Whereas if you can automate it, I know there's gray areas in between, but if you can automate a lot of it, then it's going to be cheaper, easier, quicker, faster to integrate, and so on.
It's true. I think it's very important right now because we're in this more labor intensive phase of proving the value of these metrics and testing with them. And so a lot of it is back and forth with, okay, right, we want to demonstrate how attention metrics correlate to brand lift or to sales lift, for example. So what partners, third parties, do we need to get involved in order to do that and help us to either prove or disprove those things? So quite often at the moment, it's more creating a hypothesis, working with that vendor to figure out how we're going to measure all those things accurately and effectively, and then doing it. Once you get over that first step, you can become more automated and it's less labor intensive. But in the first instance, I mean, every client I deal with will want to have a sort of full presentation as to what these things are, how they work, what vendors are, what research exists about their validation and all this kind of stuff. Then you're getting into the sort of test and learn phase where they want to meet the vendor and listen to them and hear what they've got to say. And then you're into the actual activation part. But it is the we're definitely in the sort of learning, the heavy lifting phase and the learning phase at the moment. So yeah, the people aspect is important.
It's worth taking the time to get it right, isn't it? I mean, that's the point. I mean, I think there's a sort of terrible danger that says, right, okay, we've heard of this thing called attention on Monday, and on Tuesday we wanted it applied across everything. Can you just get off, please? And actually, it does take a bit of time to make sure you're getting the right thing.
Well, Mike Follett said the other day, I spent some time with him at the IS summit. We had a chat. And it's kind of part of the fun of it, really, because the thing is with attention is it's so nuanced. It's not a simple case of saying, right, we all need to now start optimizing to high attention, because not every brand in every
No.
category needs to do that. It's very, very nuanced. So the early phases need to be around understanding how much attention do I need for this particular product at this particular life stage, for this level of competition to drive the outcome that I really want, which might be something like brand recall. So we launched a new model for Kia this year, and we wanted to understand, okay, what's the sort of attention minimum I need to be able to drive a significant uplift in recall of that particular model? So that was what the research was focused on. And that was super interesting because it basically said there's no really significant uplift in prompted awareness until you hit 3 seconds. So that gives you an interesting target for future campaigns to say, right, either digitally or in terms of cross media, I need to be optimizing ideally towards over 3 seconds of attention to drive that end goal. But in doing that, we had to set up a whole testing framework across 6 markets using multiple partners and then get the right people doing the analysis to get there. So yeah, it's quite a, it's an interesting process.
It is, and it's not as easy as people think. I mean, as you said, I mean, if you, if you're a very well-known brand and you've had a history of advertising over, decades, even longer, hundreds of years, you don't need particularly to drive awareness. And I remember I worked on Coke for many years, and Millward Brown would come and report on Coke awareness figures, and yeah, it's gone from 98 to 99,
Yeah,
awareness
exactly.
of Coke.
So,
Yeah, I mean, yeah,
and
it's
so for
great.
Coke, the application of those measures is
Yeah,
really,
be different.
reach is paramount to a brand like that. Reach, efficient reach over a period of time consistently. So you'd apply the attention metrics to make sure that you validate that the reach has actually reached someone. So it's almost inattention you're planning away from, but it's very
Yeah.
different.
You made it, you mentioned the IAS meeting the other week, and that you were at with Mike and Mike Fox. And you, I think you made the point, or somebody made the point in, at that meeting, that when people voted on how many of you in the audience are actually have worked with attention metrics, I think it was 79%, very accurate. Presumably some sort of automated on your phone or
It was,
voting.
yeah, so mobile voting, yeah.
Yeah, mobile voting. 79% said, yes, I've worked with attention metrics. And I think when you asked, could you put your hand up if you use it all the time? In other words, as part of your lingua franca, as it were, as everything that you do. I think I read it, it's only one person kept their hand up.
One person, yeah, that's right, yeah.
I mean, it'd be interesting to know who that was. I mean, I don't know, was Karen there or not? Or was...
No, well, someone, I think someone from either agency or brand, I'm not sure. I wish I'd followed up. But yeah,
But
that is
it's
the
it...
really that's the really telling point, because I think it's almost a point of frustration for me, because I've been on this journey for 5 years now, I guess. And there's a part of me that says, how are these metrics in some way not part of the day-to-day of what we're doing? And I think, even most basically, we should be applying these to steer away from stuff that nobody pays attention to. So whilst there's a load of questions around the value of low, medium, high attention and what you need, I think we can all agree there's no value to people that to ads that nobody looks at. So the placements that are at the bottom of the page or on MFA or whatever, right? Or the ad that's on the back of a bus stop facing the wall, right? There's no value to these ads. So I'm sort of amazed we're not there yet with agencies and clients going, I want to set an attention minimum of, which would be the percent viewed rate in Lumen's terms. So only counting impressions that reach people have looked at for a minimum of 0.1 seconds. Well, that to me sounds like a very simple start point that should be a no-brainer, but it's still amazing how we're not there. People would rather cling to viewability or don't want to steer away from their KPI frameworks of clicks and conversions because they're so intrinsically entrenched with their clients and commercial teams in those on those measures. And it's telling, and I think the other part is it's hard to do, as we've said, when you if you need to prove this stuff and show clients the value of attention across their KPI funnel and ultimately the impact on their brands and their business, it takes a long time to test and learn that stuff. You might be measuring attention for a year alongside brand studies alongside sales studies that might include doing something with MMM or econometrics. That's a big program of stuff to do. And to be honest, I don't think people can be bothered. I think there's, people are, it's almost like, I don't know if it's a laziness or this seems too hard to figure out. And people want a plug and play answer. And to your question earlier about my sort of six things, If you're a vendor that's been really well integrated with the ad tech ecosystem and accepted by loads of publishers, and you've got loads of case studies that show your metric is driving business success, that might win over one that takes a lot longer to figure out and prove, right?
Yeah, it is a bit. I mean, obviously, new ideas. I suppose you could put this into the basket of new ideas. It's only 5 years, after all. Even though 5 years seems like a lifetime. New ideas do take a while to grab hold, don't they? But even so, I mean, it is. I agree with you. I find it sort of rather disappointing that however much you talk about this stuff and however much you actually promote it and write about it or stand up on platforms and pontificate about it, the truth is that so many people go back to doing exactly what they've always done. You sort of you kind of wonder why it is, why that is. I suppose it's hard,
It's
but
something about the incentive system that underpins the whole process. So, we ran some tests before Christmas where we used custom bidding algorithms in programmatic to optimize for attentive placements. We A/B tested that versus a normal optimization strategy, which let's say is clicks for now, right? But the measurement framework that was set up by programmatic traders that underpinned that was looking to measure, yes, attention across the two things. You'd expect to see the attention optimized one deliver more attention, right? Which it did, but then measured things like clicks, impressions, and CPM. That's fundamentally, those are not, the whole point is that we're supposed to be trying to measure the impact on brand and business outcomes when you optimize something fundamentally different. But because clicks, CPMs, impression volumes are what are in our targets with clients and commercial teams, for example, teams don't want to not deliver those things. So some of the results of the test were, well, the attention optimization didn't deliver our key KPIs as well as the click one, but the KPIs are wrong. So
Yeah, I was going to say,
it's
the KPI
endemic.
clips. It's not surprising, is it,
It's
really?
unsurprising. Yeah, exactly. So they have to go back to that and say, okay, but what was the value of the click that was delivered in these campaigns? Like, were attention validated clicks actually higher value in terms of did they not bounce off the page as much? Did they convert to sale better? But if you haven't set it up, you're not going to be able to measure that. So really tough.
You've mentioned sort of outcomes several times and funnels and things. I mean, what's been your experience bringing it together? Because I mean, that is the ultimate. That's what we're going to get to, isn't it? Really, someone's going to say, if you buy X amount of attention, however you whatever that's defined as, and however it's measured, and so on, you can expect an uplift in the number of beans you sell, kind of thing.
For sure.
What's been your experience of that? I mean, I've had a little bit of experience of this, and I found it quite hard. I mean, I don't mean hard because of actually putting the data together, but actually getting at the raw data, the raw attention data is not the easiest thing for the reasons we talked about before. And then feeding that into any kind of advanced analytics is also not the easiest thing. I mean, have you had any success with me?
At the moment, no, but it's an active program. So it's a conversation I've had a few times with the people that lead our sort of econometrics and MMM practice. It's difficult when you're dealing with people from a couple of different worlds because I'm in my head, I say, surely if we can weight the impressions or exposures that are going into that model with quality of exposure, so either that's seconds of attention or let's say AUs from Adelaide, for example. That will tell the model a little bit more about where to attribute success. So, if I had a load of, let's say only 9% of my digital display ads were looked at, only attribute success to that 9% and not the remaining 91. So in my head, I'm quite clear that surely we can A, remove stuff from that model that we don't believe can have had an impact, like logically, but B, to then weight other exposures, like let's say cinema within there, for example, for its ability to drive really high attention, and therefore surely that had a greater impact on ROI, for example. Hasn't been done yet. So we are looking at how we can apply that. And I actually had a call last week with Dr. Grace Kite because she was quite interested in this area as well, because I think there's lots now that exists around the impact of attention on brand measures, but far less on the ultimate impact on cash ROI, hard sales. And I think once we can establish that, I think things will move a bit quicker. I think it'd be interesting to prove and disprove some things. One, there's no value to inattention. I really desperately want to prove that through MMM, surely. And then the second part is around the levels of attention required to drive that efficiently and at what cost as well. So that's the second part that's more nuanced, but yeah, we're not
I mean,
quite there.
there's a lot of work to be done in this, isn't there? I mean, it's not the easiest thing, and I know from talking to people like Grace that this is not it's not simple, and also getting hold of disaggregated or raw data from the suppliers, not again for reasons I fully understand, is also not the easiest thing. So I
Yeah,
think
no. The
it's
biggest struggle is there's quite a lot of this data now on sort of online stuff, online video and display, because we can get that at an impression level. But ultimately, it doesn't really exist for TV, out of home, print. So across those, there's normative data that you can put into those models, but they're far less nuanced. So that's a sort of issue with attention measurement today, is that it only really extends to online media at the moment. And less so to those other channels, which is problematic for, looking at the full picture.
Okay. Well, this has been really fascinating, and thank you so much for joining us on this
No
ASI call, John. And I hope we see you on a platform again soon. Thanks a
Yeah,
lot for your
thanks,
time.
bro. Nice to see you. Thanks, mate. Cheers.
Yeah.